That sounds like Craig. There he is.
Craig.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing?
Hi, Chris. Hey, guess what?
What?
My name's Jay, and this is the Grumpy Dungeon Masters.
Oh, interest.
I remembered one. I'm getting better. It only took us, what, 15 episodes?
And like 4 specials, 3 guests, 17.
Hey, we've only had 1 guest thus far.
Yeah.
We have several more lined up. Just have to get to them.
So I had a couple questions I had to throw by you.
All right. I will attempt to have reasonable answers. Attempt.
I want to start walking my cat. So in order to get me to be able to do that, I need to buy a little cat harness, a little cat leash, and I need to get him some flea medication. So,
okay.
You know,
how old is your cat?
Hold on. So I need to get flea medications and stuff like that to put on to him. I haven't brought that up with the wife yet, but I've been thinking about it for a while. So anyways, the question is this. Do tabaxis have to worry about fleas? And if they do, does like prestidigitation and the other spells that instantly clean an object work with getting rid of fleas?
That is an amazing question. So the answer I would imagine, if they are furred, and I think they are, you know, then yes, they would have to worry about fleas. I mean, people have to worry about lice, so it just makes sense that they would have to worry about fleas. Let's see. What can you do with prestidigitation? Create an instantaneous, harmless sensory effect, such as a shower of sparks, puff of wind, faint musical notes, etc. You can instantaneously light or snuff out a candle or torch or small campfire. You can clean or soil an object no larger than 1 cubic foot. That's probably the one that you're going to want to look at. You chill, warm, or flavor food. You can make colors. You create a non-magical trinket of an illusory image. Yeah, that's pretty much what you can do. So would you count removing fleas as part of cleaning?
It says 1 object. Now, the size is probably the issue.
Well, it's a cubic foot, but you can do it multiple times, just over and over.
Yeah.
I mean, so. I played a sorcerer who fucking lived for prestidigitation. We're wandering around through a swamp, and every 10 feet, I'm just casting it on myself to keep clean. I'm cleaning my boots over and over again, cleaning any mud stains over and over again.
Yeah. So those are the thoughts that permeated my mind.
These are the thoughts that go through your head when you're laying there and you've been in bed for 45 minutes and you're just finally starting to drift off. And then, hey, do tabaxis have fleas? And does prestidigitation work?
I've reached a point in my life that, like, whenever I watch a movie and something tragic happens, I'll just kind of joke to myself, like, failed his death save.
Oh, yeah.
Or,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I wonder, like, what the stats are for, like, certain individuals and whatnot. And just, like, make snide comments to the wife. Like, oh, it looks like he got a critical hit there. Burr, 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 burr. And it's probably grating to her by now. Thank God she's still with me.
She hasn't left you yet, so it's not too bad.
No, so I mean, it just seeps into my brain. It just becomes part of my core functionality.
I understand, you know? Exactly. I do it too. One of them that I've always talked about was one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. I think it was the 4th or 5th one, on Deeper Tide or some shit like that. But if you can't watch that movie seriously by any means. And as I'm watching it, the only thing I can think of is that Jack Sparrow is an epic level luck rogue. Because everything he does is not planned, but it still fucking works in his favor. Including, like, the old trope of chopping the rope on the chandelier to pull yourself up to the second story. And in the process, he grabs, like, a fucking sweet off of the table, right out the window, lands in the back of a cart, and then just rides off into the sunset.
Well, that's the mystery of the Jack Sparrow characters, whether or not he's just super lucky or if he's planning all that out. And I actually saw a video on YouTube where a guy broke down that specific scene that you just mentioned, where he had the suite and the chandelier and stuff like that. When he broke it down frame by frame, you could see how Johnny Depp was kind of like playing the character, and like he was formulating his plan and kind of looking around the room and like seeing like where all the exits were and what everybody was wearing.
It is an obvious plan. He has an obvious plan, but you still have to be, you have to have epic level luck skills to be able to pull that off.
Right.
Like, that's the only way. Like, every feat involving luck, he probably has a little bit of luck magic thrown in there. You know, what is there's a cleric, like, cantrip that gives you a plus 1d4. Maybe that's bless. Yeah, it's guidance. And then he probably has bless. So he's got, like, a level of cleric in there just to get him over that hump.
So... yeah, Jack Sparrow is one of those great characters, and like you could debate like what his stats would be for a while, you know. And like all the Arnold characters are good, debatable things as well.
Yep, and that's something we could have a little fun with at some point, is figuring out what the stats of, you know, famous characters from movies and so forth are.
Yeah, and see, what's kind of weird too is like I get a lot of people who just start playing the game. And all they want to do is emulate another character.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I let them...
I want to be Chris Urden.
I want to be Dritz. And you got to kind of like let them do that to kind of get familiar with the game. But at the same time, you got to like steer them away from that. So like... I had a guy that was like, okay, I'm going to be Thor, but I'm going to be a Dwarven cleric because I have Thor, the archetype. Like, all right, that's cool. And then I had to start like playing with him. Like, okay, you just said you just wanted you to do healing word. What's your healing word? And like bring some like role play out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best things that happened to him is he was getting really into it, and he decided to cast a spell. I'm like, all right, how do you cast a spell? And he's like, okay, well, these things like spin hammers around me, so I'm going to say my magical incantation, and all of my Dwarven ancestors are going to surround me, and then they're going to radiate their lights and give me their blessings, and I'm going to strike at the devil and kill him in one hit. I'm like, all right, well, let's see what happens. Go ahead and roll. And
that crit
fails.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I'm like, you swing your hammer and miss tragically. The Dwarven ancestors witness this. And they are saddened. And he was just heartbroken at this. And a couple sessions later, they were in Avernus, and they're coming down from whatever the city is.
I don't know. I didn't get to play enough of Avernus.
Well, they're descending in the city down into Avernus proper.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this super long rope that they basically tied together, and they're sliding down the rope, and I'm doing the appropriate stealth checks and constitution checks just to kind of give them flavor of getting down the rope. And he fails. So about halfway down, he falls. He's a good 200 feet before he hits the ground.
Oh boy.
And I gave him a chance to do a save, dexterity save to grab the rope. And he's a dwarf.
Yep.
So he's a dwarf cleric. Aha. He guidances himself. First time I actually saw his brain working as a player. So he guidances himself first.
Smart. And
said a prayer to the ancestors to grab a hold of the rope. And he did. He rolled with guidance, still failed. And he fell all the way down and smashed into the ground. He was just dust and just a little squish dwarf everywhere.
And poor guy.
So bad. And then he is like a character, he kind of like, once he got picked back up, he's like, I'm never invoking my ancestors again. This is the worst shit possible. I'm like, yeah, buddy, I don't like you.
Little did he know his ancestors were actually a bunch of pricks. Like, they were cursing him with bad luck is what was happening.
It was so bad, and I felt so... It was so great, too, because, like, he just fell, and he was going,
See, I love the fact that you're talking about people emulating other famous characters and all, and your guys, you end up with Dwarven Thor, which is a cool thing to emulate. I end up with one of my players trying to emulate fucking Ron Swanson.
Yeah.
Like that. That's what he's playing. He is literally playing Ron Swanson. He hates people. He does manly things. I like the player actually has a list of Ron Swanson quotes that he'll just drop throughout the game.
Well, I mean, so what? How did you handle it then?
I just let him.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm not. Yeah, he tried. So I with me rolling on one or running on roll 20, I let people pick the pictures for their characters and whatnot, and he sends me a caricatured picture of Ron Swanson. I'm like, no, I'm not using that for your actual character. So we found him something a little more appropriate. Still a bearded dude with a mustache, or the mustache is very prominent. But
well, what was the appropriate picture?
I picked it for him. He was okay with it, but it was R.J. McCready from The Thing. But it is it's a portrait of him, so it's not like a photo of Kurt Russell.
Right. So speaking of that, with characters that kind of like when players go to build characters out or pick characters, and you have those initial rules that you set up.
You mean session zero?
Yeah. So we talked about this before in length, and we lost the podcast that was of that. And at the time, and even still now, session zero is something that I rarely ever do. I honestly work with my players ahead of time. I get them situated, and I have them know what they are. I usually work with them one-on-one with all the rules, and then the first session is just hitting the ground running. And I will say over the past couple campaigns, I have completely forgot to even have the characters give them a moment to actually breathe and introduce their characters. Now, when we do our Icewind Dale on twitch.tv/Kirby Dungeon Masters this Saturday or last Saturday.
You say this Saturday, but yeah, by the point this comes out, it's going to be a couple weeks back.
So. Last Saturday and every Saturday at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, there you go.
So our first session, I'm going to have to give them time to breathe. Everyone that's playing Icewind Dale is kind of going really gung-ho and just kind of like throwing them in the situations, and I'm pulling them back a little bit and kind of really slow playing up everything. So hopefully that works, but I'm still not going to really have a session zero with them. And the concept still is kind of foreign to me because I never even did one in fourth edition. But fourth edition was always like, hey, you guys are all together. You know each other. And we made your characters. It took 4.5 hours because fourth edition was trash with making characters.
So you mentioned.
So we have your characters and let's begin playing the game finally, please. Thank you. So
yep, go ahead.
Explain what a real session zero is to the three people who don't know what a session zero is, including myself.
Okay. So, and mind you, this is the first time I've done a session zero with fifth edition. I probably haven't done a session zero in, I don't know, 20 years. So maybe not 20 years, but it's been a long time since I've even done one. But basically the idea behind a session zero is everybody getting together. And you're not, maybe you'll get to play some that night or, whatever, however you schedule it out. But the idea is for you as the Dungeon Master to have the conversation with your players so that everybody is on the same page for the campaign. And this can cover a lot of different stuff. So I'll cover what I did with my session zero. And then I'll cover some more things about other session zeros. I've been playing with the same group of players for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years at this point. So I don't have to have the complete gamut of a session zero. Icewind Dale, Faerun, and Forgotten Realms is new, completely, more or less completely new to two of my players. They have played in some of the other campaigns that were, you know, set there, but they're still, they don't know the world. They just know, you know, oh, they played Strahd, or they played, I don't know, whatever the Tiamat one was. Like, they played those. They still don't know the world. They know nothing about Icewind Dale. So my going through a session zero with them was to explain, this is what Icewind Dale is. Now, this is what the campaign version of Icewind Dale is. Because, as you know, Icewind Dale has always been cold and kind of miserable. There's barbarian tribes and orc tribes and dragons and giants everywhere. You know, but the place, 10 towns, still survives just fine. But for 2 years now, there has been a, you know, just a constant storm brewing. The sun never really comes up. You get 4 hours a day where it's out. And even then, there's no sunlight. It's still behind clouds and behind blizzards and everything. So Icewind Dale is just an absolute shithole, a miserable place to live. And I wanted to impart that information on them. Then with this Icewind Dale campaign, there's also all of the secrets that characters can start with. And, you know, you're not required to do them, but I'm using, every one of my characters has some sort of a secret or a background. If I didn't have a session zero...
I gave one of my players one secret.
Yeah, but you included it. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas in my case, all of them have something. Some of them might not matter. Some of them may never come up. Some of them might matter a whole hell of a lot. Just to, you know, but it was something that I individually could have talked to each of them about before the game session. But it's just better if I get them all together. We're talking about what Icewind Dale is. We were talking about, these are the characters you're going to play. This is the situation that you are in. And this is what I expect from you as a game master. You know, my one player throwing out Ron Swanson, like, I could tell immediately he's not taking it seriously. And that session zero gave me the opportunity, when he started seeing all of the other players were very much taking it as a serious campaign, he quickly fell into that mode too. But yeah, like, it really is just to get everyone on that same page. I can impart them with all of the information that they need to know ahead of time. They're starting in the town of Bryn Shandir. Most of them know nothing about that place. So, bam, here's all that information. And we spent 2 hours for them making characters and me just filling their heads with all the information that they as characters would know. Then after that, we actually did play the first leg of the adventure. I'm not going to give any spoilers, obviously, but there's a whole lot of little adventures you can go on in the beginning. This was a very straightforward, very simple one. They've done it 1,000 times under me, and we had a good couple of hours, and everybody played exceedingly well. There's great role play, which might not have been there if I'd said, yeah, if there was no session zero, if I just said, this is the campaign we're doing, make your characters when you have time, and we're just going to start at 6 o'clock on Saturday. So, as for an actual full session zero, you generally are only going to need those if you're playing with people that you don't play with regularly. And that is where you, as a DM, get to impart what you deal with. If you're playing in person, it can be such as, when we get together, this is how we're doing food. Yeah. Because everybody shows up, are we ordering pizza? Or are we not going to order pizza? Should people bring their own food, bring their own drinks? These are sort of the rules of my house. Then there's also the, what are we going to cover in game? There are certain topics I, as a DM, I do not really cover in game. Like sexual relationships between characters and stuff. I will breeze over that. Some people really add that in depending on, their games and whatnot.
What age they are? Cough, cough, 12 to 15.
Yeah. I mean, generally when you're a lot younger, you'll see that more. But, it allows you to flesh out all the details of what you allow in your campaign and what you do not. It also helps you to figure out your players a little better if you don't know these people. You know, sometimes you can avoid bad players early on if you have that session zero. You can say, okay, this guy's already going to be a problem, or you know, or these people are not going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess I'm very introverted, so I don't like a lot of people. So I, you know, running Adventures League, I meet everybody, and I'm always as friendly as I can, and I'm very welcoming to everybody there. And, you know, I always have the occasional bad person, but there's never a session zero. I just have to kind of deal with things, you know, as they come up. Like if someone's making someone else uncomfortable, I just kind of squash it right then and there. And I'm an old man, so I know exactly when that's happening, especially with the younger crowd. But when it comes to my home campaigns, like you said, everybody at my table knows each other and kind of knows where all the limits are. And just, we're here to play a game, not talk politics, not talk world events.
But I mean, that's another thing. Yeah. You know, how what are you allowed to talk about at the table? Cell phone usage at the table. You know, we've all had those players who sit there on their fucking phones.
So I remember complaining to my wife about people who are just on their cell phones all the time and don't know what the heck's going on. And that's a common trope among players.
Oh yeah, spinning the dice used to be the big one, or stacking dice. Oh fuck, I hated that.
So the first time I got to play as a player with one of my players who was DMing for the first time, that's the first thing I did is just pull up my phone and just like playing along, just doing stuff. And you know, my turn comes up. But at least when my turn came up, I knew exactly what I was going to do, and my plan had not changed at all. So there was no delay in me playing my turn. Mm-hmm. Versus sometimes at Adventures League, you just have to really, oh, what's going on? Oh, it's my turn.
Yeah.
What happened to the guy that? What happened to the NPC we were talking to? He got killed, and we have to spend 15 minutes telling everybody exactly what happened, and then he does something that's just against the rules and just irritates me. But
I literally have been doing that in the Star Wars game because there's so many players and we're on roll 20 and it might be 15 minutes between my turns. So occasionally I'm quick to it and I immediately jump back into it. I don't have that, you know, distraction, but there are definitely some times we've come up to me and I have to figure out who's dead, where is everybody, and what's going on.
The only thing that bothers me is I usually, whenever I play like my fighter or a tank, I usually have like, here are five things that I can do when my turn happens. So when the turn happens and like one, two, and four are no longer options, I have three and five left, and three is the better of the two options, I go with that one.
Hey, at least in the Star Wars game, I have one thing I'm doing. I'm doing it every turn. That's never going to change.
The problem with the Star Wars game is that even though we have a team of like long range people, everybody kills everyone that's the closest first. So I can't, like, okay, there's one melee target. He's right there. He just went. I'm going to have a turn before he goes. I can get into flanking and I'm going to stab the crap out of him. It'll be fine. And he's already at like one third health. I can kill him. No one needs to touch him. I'll kill him on my turn.
And
the very next first turn, someone shoots him. Like, you're a sniper, for Christ's sake. Just shoot the thing that's over there. I'll stab this thing here.
I have a I only use a sniper rifle, and I'm making sure that I shoot the farthest things from me.
So I've never really talked about like the rules when it comes to like, you know, what players want and what, you know, what I want out of the campaigns, what I want out of the players, what restrictions I may have. I usually write up a huge article and I use D&D Beyond for it. And then I post that and say, hey, here's the campaign link, read the campaign guidance document, and then go through and make your characters, mess up if you have any questions. And I did that for Icewind Dale, and it was about 3 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
Not like paragraphs of text, but
I mean that effectively is a session zero, at least a portion of it.
my other friend DM liked it so much he stole it for his session, for his campaign in Icewind Dale.
So like I'm on Reddit right now just because I looked up, you know, what do you talk about during a session zero, and there's a massive list. I'm not going to go through the whole damn thing, but I'm going to go through a couple of them that are kind of important to talk about if you ever do a session zero. So earning XP. Earning XP is one of the things that should be talked about in any campaign. Once your players sort of get used to how you run things, it might not be as big of a deal. But there's there's the whole idea of milestones or just actually earning XP as you go along. I used to always do XP, but I've become a big fan of milestones. Just at these certain points, you gain a level. It saves me a lot of counting. First game session, boom, you get a level. Second game session, probably give you a level. Third game session, maybe not. We'll probably give you another level at the fourth game session. So you know, just sort of spread it out and make it a little farther between game sessions at the higher end level they get. You know, earning XP, it might not be that way. Star Wars, we're doing the XP thing, and who knows when we're getting a level.
It seems to be every week, even though we're like, oh, we need 10,000 experience points to get to okay, we earned 20.
We had a couple of we've had a couple of game sessions where we did not gain levels. But yeah, it's been fairly frequent.
At one point in time we had two levels in the queue.
Yeah, but we had played three game sessions trying to get that. So let's see, some other ones. Behavioral stuff, that alcohol, narcotics, cell phones, player attention. These are all just sort of the ones we kind of discussed. Here's one I see. Unannounced dice rolls. And this one sort of falls to me under cheating. I don't like people to be just rolling dice and then announcing what they're doing and then rolling it again. Like, I've seen this before and I've called people out on it. If it's not your turn, just roll some fucking dice for fun. I don't care. But if it's your turn, don't go rolling those dice multiple times. Yeah, not unless you're supposed to. Player versus... Yeah. Go ahead. Go.
I think the only time I've done that as a player is like, I want to know what my character would know.
Kind of thing. Sure,
I usually say something. Yeah.
Right, that. Yeah, you say something. I'm going to see whether what my character would do here. I'm going to make an intelligence check, and then you roll it. That's fine. But just rolling it and then thinking the DM isn't paying attention to you and then rolling it again because you didn't like the roll. I mean,
I got my 20. That's a feat, boy.
Yeah. PvP. Player versus player. That is probably something that should be talked about, especially if it's new players. Oh, for the love of God, talk to new players about it. I, as a DM, I do allow player versus player a lot of the time, but I really don't like it.
When does it ever come up?
It comes up with me fucking often. My players are rude to each other, man.
I don't think I've had PvP happen as a DM.
I get it every other game session. Maybe not like outright attacking each other, but one of them trying to push somebody into lava. You know, that happened recently. So yeah,
I was attacked when I was playing a fourth edition character. It was some homebrew campaign and we were supposed to find all these like dragon crystals, and the dragon. We met up with the dragon, and the dragon was mortally wounded and was dying. And like, there's this little girl, and she's attached to the dragon some way, like through their soul. So if the dragon dies, she's gonna die, but the dragon, the little girl's gonna turn into the gem. And we had to collect her that way. Very like BioShock, Little Sister, Big Daddy, or whatever that relationship was.
Yep.
So I remember I was playing an Earth Elemental Warforged. So there's no emotion for my guy. And the dragon's like, you know, he's like, ease my pain and suffering and take the crystal and you must blah, 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 blah. So I just like, all right, slash dead coup de grace. And the rogue in the party was like, no, we can't do this. We have to find some way to save it. And he's like trying to hold the wound. And here I come up and just like make one in the dragon's throat. So he got so mad. He attacked me. He critted me and did something like 100 damage. It was ridiculous. And I had an ability that was a reaction that I could take any hit and make a temporary hit points. So he hit me. He blew his daily. He hit me, critted me, 100 damage, and I made a temporary hit points. And where he was now flanked with a barbarian. The barbarian player is just like, oh yeah, I'm going to kill the rogue. So he hits the rogue and wastes the rogue. And he got so mad, he basically like threw his pen down and he just left. And we kind of like quietly ended the session and we never played again. It was a trick.
So, yeah. So speaking of, that's what we're talking about. You know, you can occasionally avoid bad players or situations like that if you have that. If you're okay with PvP, make sure you tell your players that. If you want limited PvP, make sure you explain that. You know, you as the DM, you have control, and your session zero is the time to impart all of that knowledge to these people. Let's see, what else do we got? Rules debates. That's an important one. Me and you, we talked about this a lot. Because both of us are kind of numbers guys. We are kind of rules guys. But the rules debates, that's a time for you to tell your players, if you don't know, tell them ahead of time. If I don't know what a rule is, I'm not going to sit here and look it up. We'll spend 2 minutes hashing it out, and then I'm making a ruling. We can find out the answer later. You know, it gives you that opportunity to tell them you're going to try to always be consistent with how you handle situations. And once again, this also comes down to if it's the same group you're generally playing with, they already understand how you do things. But for new groups, these are important conversations to have.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we got on here. Pet peeves. We all have those. You definitely want to. No one can play a rogue because rogues suck. Creation stats. You know, how are you going to create your characters? I personally like for them to roll.
Yeah, we were talking about that today. How much you hate point buy.
I fucking hate point buy. It's such garbage. I don't hate point buy. I hate the amount that you get for point buy. Like, what is it, 27 points? You can't start above a 15? Like, what the fuck?
Then make it 37 and just go with the... I mean, that's a variant rule, is to start with 37 instead of 27. And you start at the... at a higher, not a higher level, but just you're a more epic character.
I like playing better characters. You're not supposed to be the fucking barber. I mean, you are supposed to be the elite of the elite. That's why you are adventurers. Every one of you is fucking Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant. You know, you're not some guy who rides the pine on third string.
See, I disagree. I think with fifth edition specifically, I think that you may be adventurers, but you're definitely not seasoned and or this is your first. You're the best person in your little podunk backwater town. That's it. Your stats aren't great. And
I disagree.
In fourth edition, that's the way the character's built. In fourth edition, you essentially start off as like a level 3 character in fifth edition.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to compare it, and at that point in time, yeah, you've been adventuring, you know your way around stuff, you have a daily, you have your encounter powers, you have all your feats and skills, and you can just, you know, take on a dragon right now if you really, really needed to. But in fifth edition, I always had the impression that you were very weak. Like you had just left your training monastery, you had just left, you got into the real world. Or you just had your farm destroyed by goblins and you're picking up your pitchfork and you're going off and doing it. And now you will become that adventurer.
Okay, so here, this is why I disagree with that heavily. And why I say everybody is supposed to be the elite of the elite, as far as the characters go. So I'm looking at, I'm in the Icewind Dale module that we're getting ready to run. The city of Bryn Shandur, their militia can muster up to 250 soldiers. So that's literally a quarter of the population that they can pull. Those guys use, all of those soldiers use tribal warrior stats. You know what their stats are? They have 11 hit points. They have a strength 13, dex 11, con of 12, 8 intelligence, 11 wisdom, and 8 charisma. That is your fucking average person. You're supposed to be above and beyond that.
No, not above and beyond, and you're not equal. You're just like a step above that.
If you use the 27 point buy, you're going to be just above that.
Right. That to me makes sense.
For me, it doesn't make sense. I think they need to be well beyond that.
See, for me, it's like, okay, you are, let's say you are one of those veterans, and you know, you would be the one at the top of the class. You'd be the one that everyone's looking up to, like, man, I wish I could be that guy. And you're like, you know what? This is great. I'm going to go off and do my own thing for a little while, you know, taking some extended leave and go off and do something. And that to me is exactly where 27 kind of puts you.
See,
at 37 with a point buy, you are well above that. You're like three steps above that.
Yeah.
And if you roll for your stats, you could be anywhere from three steps below to five steps ahead. It really can vary, especially if you're very lucky with a die.
If you're rolling dice, I mean, sure, then those numbers can go off the rails.
And you roll 3 18s, 2 15s, and a 14.
Drew. Sorry, calling out a player of mine who always does that.
I had one of our mutual friends roll up his Drow Rogue in 4th edition for the first time, and he sat there and re-rolled, you know, the character up. 3 18s, 2 15s, and 14.
So, I ran a campaign, I ran the Hobtown one for a long time. By the point we end that campaign, they were 20th level, and Drew's Warlock had a 20 in every stat except for like two of them, I think, and those were 18s. Yep, and I mean that's because he, you know, mind you, he put stat boost and he had a couple of items to boost a couple things, but you know, his starting stats was probably two or three 18s, like a 16, and you know, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah,
I've seen him do it multiple times. Like he just has that knack for it. He's also the same guy who will roll, you know, 10 criticals over the course of one evening. Whereas me, I may go two or three game sessions without a single crit.
You know how I've always wanted to roll stats just for one game is that 3d6 straight and just see how that happens.
I've done it lots. I played second edition for years.
I think I need to sit down and write the hardcore campaign setting, which takes my idea from earlier, which is like you pick an item in like a farmhouse and that's what your class is. And then have you all start off with 3d6 straight. And
I don't think you can do it with 5th edition. Like 5th edition is designed differently.
No, I don't. I think you can. You just need to use a. You just have to treat a one quarter monster as one. Like the difficulty is going to be really hard, but you just have to treat a CR quarter monster as a CR one monster.
If you want to do it the right way, and this is how first edition and second edition were, 3d6, you do it six times, and those stats go in order. So that first 3d6 you roll, that's your strength. Next one's your dex, then your con, then your intelligence, then your wisdom, then your charisma. So you'll effectively not even know what you are playing until you've rolled your stats. You know, if you end up with, if you wanted to play a fighter, but you have a strength of six, I mean, you can, but I don't recommend it. Could be fun. I really don't think it would last for long. Your characters would probably be dead fairly quickly.
Well, I'll put on my list of campaign one shots to draft up after I finish this Christmas one and the next one.
Yeah, in the first adventure of Icewind Dale, they're out there. They're all level one, and they're just fighting the standard monsters that you would be fighting at level one. And it's so easy for players to forget how fucking weak they are at that level. They just get used to rolling through stuff and being able to fight things. And they go in there, and man, the barbarian, before they even get an attack, loses 3/4 of their hit points. And then the wizard gets off one spell, and then he gets dropped immediately. At that point, every one of the players is like, oh yeah, we're first level. We have like 10 or less hit points.
Alright, so one thing that I'm really worried about with Icewind Dale is I want this sense of like dread and death to be around every corner. And I'm using the variant roll for your hit points. And I'm very worried that I'm going to get a character who's just going to roll ones 3 or 4 levels in a row.
So have you decided to not do the half that we talked about, where basically you roll the dice, if you don't get half, or if you get lower than half, able to take half?
I am doing my best to stay true to the raw rules.
Okay.
I'm not even using the crit rule that I normally use. I use the 4th edition crit rule for my players because I think the 5th edition crit rule is super weak.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't use the 4th edition crit rule with monsters because it would just murder a player instantly.
Yeah.
The 4th edition crit rule is that you would essentially still roll 2 die, just one of them is max.
Yep.
So you max all, you do max damage plus an extra die roll instead of just roll twice. So,
which personally I do like that better, but I'm not going to change the way they've done it in 5th.
Because rolling 2d10 and getting 2 is the worst.
Yeah, it sucks.
It is not a crit. I mean, it makes crits worthless. You know, so but having it deal 11, that's something. That's
it. It guarantees that you're going to get more than half.
Yeah. So I'm sticking with that variant rule you have, that if, you know, if they get less than what would they would get on a normal level up. I like it. But this isn't what I consider an epic level campaign or heroic level campaign. They're not heroes. They're people.
Yeah.
You know,
where that's one variant that we're doing, because I am running heroes in my Icewind Dale. I'm keeping much more of a traditional D&D game, what I'm used to running, what people are used to playing, whereas you are taking it that next step. I am running a survival campaign. Weight matters. I'm making sure they all keep up with encumbrance. Survival, things like that do matter. But it's not going to be the end-all be all of the campaign. I still want them to just go out and smash goblins and save townspeople. Whereas in yours, it sounds like you're going to be running the movie The Thing. Like everyone dies in the end. And I love it. I love it.
So speaking of The Thing, was that the guy actually The Thing at the end?
So John Carpenter, the director, producer, guy who created it, has always intentionally left that up to the viewer's discretion. If you played The Thing video game, I don't recall which one, but one of them was The Thing. Because the video game picks up shortly after where the rescue team actually comes to the camp. And then it's sort of an adventure game where you have to find all of the clues and so forth. And it did lead to one of them having been The Thing. I can't remember if it was MacReady or Childs, Kurt Russell or Keith David. Been too long. Yeah, I haven't played the game in a decade or more, so.
So I saw the theory that MacReady was actually the Thing, mm-hmm. and that he's just happy to freeze and wait for the next expedition to get there so they can thaw him out, and then he just continues on. But I've always liked the fact that the other side of it, where he wasn't the Thing, and Childs was, and he gave him the Molotov cocktail, and he was drinking gasoline, so it wouldn't affect him. And also, Childs, when he was breathing, wasn't breathing out hot air. Mm-hmm. So there was no mist vapor when he was breathing out in the cold air. But there was a MacReady, and the Thing doesn't breathe out cold air. He doesn't breathe. So that's why Childs was the Thing at the end.
Now at this point, have
the lung vapor, and he drank the gasoline. I like that theory the best.
At this point, we have confused the hell out of half of our viewers or listeners. So if you have never seen the movie The Thing, and I'm not talking about the newer one, you need to go watch the one from 1980. It is the greatest horror film ever made. Any horror aficionado will agree with me. It is an amazing, amazing film.
Wait, there's a new Thing?
They did a prequel that came out, I don't know, seven years ago. It's fine. I actually watched it on HBO Max the other day. It's a good movie. It is not even close to the John Carpenter one.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to recreate that.
Yeah.
If you don't go back and do all the puppets and you don't do all the...
Yeah, like it's all CGI everything.
It's going to fail.
Yeah.
I was watching, I think with my wife before we logged on to do this, it was like 100 years of horror movies, and it was not Vincent Price, but Count Dooku. Damn it. What's his
name? Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee. He narrated and talked the whole thing, and it was very, like, it started here with me. and he kind of walked through all the horror stuff, and just like, so many horror movies were set up to be so good, mm-hmm. and then were ruined by like production just going in and throwing in a monster at the very end and just ruining things. It's kind of, or yep. going back and like doing it again, or making Abbott and Costello versions of it. It was kind
of. Yeah. Most horror movies, unfortunately, the people behind them, a lot of them might get ruined by producers and post-production and shit like that. But horror movies, the ones through the 70s and 80s, a lot of them were amazing, amazing films because of the pacing, because of the timing. They just understand that it's what you do not see that is more terrifying than what you see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why Alien was so, so good. That's why The Thing is amazing, because you don't ever really see what you're up against. Not until the very end of the whole film.
Yeah, and that's honestly what I'm really hoping to achieve with my Icewind Dale, is that sense of just dread. I don't want it to be too... I want them to succeed. I want them to do well. So I'm not going to like throw everything, the entire book at them. But, you know, mm-hmm. if they decide to go out there without enough rations, they're not coming back, you know.
You'll starve to death.
Yeah, and by the time they hear this, they've already experienced it on twitch.tv/GrumpyDungeonMasters.
Check us out.
So, like, things that I'm doing for my campaign, I guess I can talk a little bit more about this, is, you know, mm-hmm. I'm starting a few days before the beginning of this book. I'm starting... There's a certain event that happens once a month in all the towns, and I'm starting at that time, and then forwarding up a couple days, and then starting them, and then like when they leave town, you know, I'm assuming that town's pretty much under lockdown because of just the weather, so I'm gonna have like guards stop them and take down their names, ask them where they're going and when they expect to be back, and if they're not back by that expected time, then all of their property will be forfeit to the, you know, to the local government, because resources are scarce. So if you're dead and your little room, whatever it is, has resources in there that they can use, they're going to just go take it. So if you're not back by this point in time, your stuff is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of like really drive home that sense of like,
yeah.
most people are going to die if they leave. So most people aren't leaving.
Yeah, and these are definitely creative liberties you're taking with the campaign. Yeah. And I personally love it. And as a game master, it is your prerogative. These campaigns are written the way they are for a reason, but there's nothing that says you can't just sort of use these as a backdrop for a bit and kind of go off and do your own thing to alter them. You know, it's your storytelling process, and how you get there is up to you.
Yeah, so like I'm going to drop a couple rumors for them, too, to give them a couple other towns, and let them kind of decide like where they're going to go or what they're going to do. And
I had initially planned on doing it sandbox, but I've decided I'm not going to. I've already just sort of been picking and choosing where I'm going to have them go initially.
The first session is very, this is the quest you guys are going to start doing. And then I'm going to give them the one that kind of branches them off to other towns. And then they can then pick a town to go to and do the rumor for that town. And that's also, too, is I'm going to, one of the quests is hunting down a bad guy. And I'm going to introduce that bad guy in my story earlier as well, too.
Right.
As long as they pass a DC 10 perception check, which they should since it's passive.
Whereas me, because that bad guy, when they set you in this quest, you get to pick. You can either randomly decide or pick where he's going to be at. I'm actually going to just make that choice as opposed to doing it random, because that allows me more control. Since I'm running everything on roll 20, it gives me more. I can just set things up easier, rather than having to sort of pull things out of my ass when they go off on a tangent and go to some other town.
Right. But I found a lot of maps, a lot of resources online, especially on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a subreddit, just Rhyme of the Frost Maiden, and people have made all the maps for all the Chapter 1 quests already. So it's really easy for me just to import those into the Foundry system and just have those quests ready to go.
It's still... It's easier for me as a game master to know where they're going. Once they get past those initial quests, I'll probably just open it up and let them run around and do their thing. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
One last thing I wanted to go over before we get done here with the session zero, and I forgot to mention this earlier.
What's the session zero?
You son of a bitch. And this one's actually really important. If you run variant rules, you need to talk to your players during the session zero. Once again, primarily if it's people you haven't ever played with. As an example, I run a variant rule when it comes to potions. If you're drinking a potion for yourself, I do that as a bonus action. If you're feeding it to another person, that's a full action. Whereas in the bonus action thing is not a part of standard D&D. So I make sure that my players know that ahead of time.
But it's a free action through the move.
No, it isn't. It's never a free action to drink a potion.
It's a free action. It's part of your use object interaction during your move.
Oh, no. Did somebody actually argue this?
I don't think so. So... I remember there's a rant that we recorded where I was ranting about things you can do during your move.
I remember that rant all too well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But drinking a potion was not one of them. Pulling it out would have been one of them.
So pulling it out, I guess, would be the use object interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could even push a little bit further and just say that the drinking it as well. But it really depends on how big you think potions are. So if you think potions are just a shot glass, sure, free action, who cares? But if they're like Diablo 3, Diablo 2 style,
The giant beakers.
The giant beaker that's like 3 pints, it's gonna take you a couple seconds to drink that, buddy.
Chug, 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 chug.
So I see people who make those wonderful... healing potion kits online where they take a cool bottle and they fill it with like wax and throw D4s of the same color in there. So you just have to pop the cork and roll the dice and there's the potion. I love those. I really love those. I want one of those.
That's a cool thing. I like it. I appreciate it. Plus, you get you get a couple of D4s out of it. So what do they do if it's a greater healing potion? They add a whole lot more dice.
Yeah, just get bigger and bigger. Just more and more dice. It's awesome. But yeah, so overall, session zeros are required. I guess I do mine in writing. Most people do them in a table, I guess.
They're primarily going to be required if you're playing with new people that you're not familiar with. If you're starting up a new campaign, a lot of that can be handled. It's sort of in between, but if you do really want to get everyone on the same page, have them sit down for a couple of hours before the first game session and go over things with them. It'll help. Yeah, it'll bring out better role playing.
I write up so much stuff too, so I think I will forever keep doing that.
I don't write shit. I don't write anything. I have a few notes here and there, and that's about it.
So I think we're wrapping up. But one thing I wanted to mention before we wrapped up fully is that the RPG Writer Workshop is coming back around in November. So the whole workshop will, I think, goes live November 1st. And if you go to RPG Writer Workshop, you can sign up for the class. There's a scholarship program where you can just sign up and get the course for free. That's what we did. And
what you did.
July.
And signed me up for it.
Sign up your friends and your family members. I definitely suggest that if you're trying to learn how to write campaign settings, this was a lot of really good information in there. And a lot of organization. Like, if you need organization and direction, like day 3, do this, or day 4, do that, this will help you with getting that all set up. They give you everything, and there's a lot of good writers there. And the community so far has been very, very good. And I've met a lot of good people through it. So I'm definitely doing it again, even though it's not my first. Still doing it again. And
there's always things you can learn.
Yeah. It is accelerated this time around because it's in November and because of Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely suggest people check it out. And
yeah. I mean, as somebody who went through a few days of it, I'm too ADD to have done the whole damn thing. But if you really want to be a writer writing modules, writing campaigns, writing whatever, Dungeons and Dragons related or RPG related, it was a fantastic little course. It helped you out a lot. You got your module done and up on the DM's Guild just by going through that class.
Yep. You're going to go through this in November?
No. I'm sure you're going to try to talk me into it. Then you're just going to sign me up for it.
I'm just going to sign you up for it and you can do it.
But I'll probably do the same thing, get through 3 or 4 days of it and be done with it.
Just do what you plan on doing last time. Just write a bunch of magic items and we'll publish it.
We'll see. We'll see. But yeah, check it out. Check us out on Grumpy Dungeon Masters on Twitch. And he'll be doing
Twitch.tv/Grumpy Dungeon Masters.
Yep. We're going to promote the hell out of it, at least for a few weeks.
Twitch.tv/Grumpy Dungeon Masters.
Bye, Craig. Have a good one, people.
Twitch.tv/Grumpy Dungeon Masters. Twitch.tv/Grumpy Dungeon Masters.